Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favourite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I got one here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new edition of the Microbrew Podcast. That's Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My boy is back. That's Kurt Hoag. He's off in Arizona.
The boys are back in town. The boys are back in town.
Except not really, because you're not here.
Well, that's true. It's not boys. It's just boy in this case. Yeah. You are
and my,
in Phoenix.
And my family is here, and there are boys. So.
No, just your wife, your daughter. And Kurt Hoag in Arizona watching Milwaukee Brewers baseball. That is a very exciting place to be. You are here, you are there, and we got to talk about it. We got to talk about how things are going, buddy. It has been a few weeks since we chatted about the Milwaukee Brewers. There has not been a lot of news in this camp. That was true with Todd Rosiak there, other than this cat that he was chasing. That's not a metaphor. He was chasing a feline.
And multiple cat storylines.
Lots of cat storylines. Yeah, a cat in the dugout, hanging out with the Brewers. So lots of cats everywhere. But we got some rotation stuff to discuss. We can talk World Baseball Classic if we want. We can try not to slice open our thumbs, which is something I managed to pull off this week.
Good Lord. That's I'm sure there are worse injuries.
Oh, like, there are, for sure.
Like tearing your Achilles.
Oh, God.
But slicing your thumb or a finger is... as something, you know, I just don't want to do. It's at the bottom of my list of, like, I want to do this.
I very stupidly said to my wife, you know, I wish I had a lower body injury because my lower body's useless. I ain't doing anything anyway. Now I can't even type because my finger is destroyed. I needed stitches. It needed, like, treatment and stuff. But, you know, if I tore my Achilles, while that would be painful, I don't need to walk. I'm just an office guy. I sit here and I talk into screens, but I need that finger to type. So we're working around it. It's going to be fine. It was extremely painful last night, but we're way past that. We're going to be in really good shape here in a very short period of time.
It's too bad you're not hopped up on, like, morphine for the show.
Right? I mean, this is like a deep, deep cut. I, like, stabbed myself real bad. All they do is, like, they just put, like, local anesthetic on it, give you a couple stitches, and they give you antibiotics. It's not...
That's too bad. Yeah, I was hoping you'd be hopped up on painkillers.
No.
And the show would just go off the rails.
It would be incredible. What would I talk about? Obviously college basketball, because it's March Madness and I'm sitting around watching college basketball all day. Obviously we'd be talking about probably my kids, various athletic pursuits for better or mostly for worse. Man, what else? What else would, like, immediately come top of mind? I don't know, but it would be great. It would be
Kyle Harrison.
Oh, we should talk about Kyle Harrison.
Yeah. So, okay. So let's just talk about Kyle Harrison from the top. Let's,
I mean, we have a lot to discuss on the rotation front, but Kyle Harrison has caught your eye.
The ball hops out of his hand.
Like the movie Hoppers.
It sizzles. New in theaters. His stuff pops.
That's exciting.
I've sat right behind home plate for now both of his starts. So, like, let me catch some video. Let me see if I can get a feel for how this at bat is. And buddy, let me tell you, he's nasty.
It's interesting to me that the Red Sox were just, like, cool with doing this for the Brewers a second year in a row, because Quinn Priester was with Pittsburgh, struggled, went to Boston. They changed some things. Seems like it was some positive development. And then they ship him to Milwaukee, and Milwaukee is like, yeah, we like what you're doing in Boston. We're going to accelerate that. And turn out to have, like, a top, you know, frontline starting rotation pitcher. And now they're going to do it again. Kyle Harrison, who of course started with the Giants, changed some things with Boston, got this changeup going.
Oh my goodness.
And it seems like this developed after he was traded to Milwaukee, or, like, while he was still with Boston, because he was talking to an old teammate, right?
Yeah. So the storyline behind the changeup, which is a disgusting kick change that gets, like, up to negative 10 inches of induced vert, which is insane for a changeup. They began throwing it with the Red Sox, but he couldn't command it. The feel wasn't there. The shape wasn't what they wanted. And he had a changeup. He had an old, standard circle change. And that's just kind of what he kept throwing. This never left the experimental stage. Now, that is just goes to show you how development in baseball doesn't, you can't predict it. It's not linear. You never know when something's going to happen. That what the Red Sox taught him, I'm sure all of that helped him. But then one little grip change suggested by Hayden Birdsong, old teammate of Harrison's, who's on the Giants now, and he throws it and he's like, oh, that's it. Oh, I can throw the nasty changeup. And he said he showed up to camp and he was like, he had thrown some, he was like, he thought he might have something. And then basically he gets into his bullpens and they're just like, okay, throw it with conviction. And he threw it with conviction a few times and they're like, yeah, that's good. So this gets at the whole semblance of the Brewers pitching lab, and they are not the ones teaching him this pitch, but they are doing what they do. Or, we haven't seen him throw a game with the Brewers, but chances are pretty good that they are going to do what they do. And what is that, JR? It is get the most out of what you have. Now, they'll develop a pitch here. They'll develop a pitch there, tweak this, tweak that. Definitely a lot of mechanical stuff, but all of this is to maximize the pitcher that you are. So he's in a great spot. The stuff sizzles, man. I'm calling him bacon grease because the fastball pops out of that arm slot, and then you can see the rise on it, or how it just holds its plane. And then the secondary stuff is just nasty. Slider / slurve is disgusting, and obviously this changeup is pretty good as well. So it's not a comfortable at bat if you're a lefty. But and then if you're a righty, like, you're the one that has to deal with the changeup. So I don't see how he's not on the opening day roster.
Do you think bacon grease as a nickname will stick? Do you think
no,
he can make that happen?
Nothing I do is gonna stick, but
you are not in position to make Fetch happen.
But bacon grease might be what I call him on the pod.
It's tough to get a two-word nickname to stick. That's a really, really, it's got to be really special.
Yeah, you could just shorten it to Grease.
You could. There's a lot of possibility there. Lightning. Grease Lightning. I could see that working out as a American Family Field sound
but
system
like,
opportunity.
But do I need it to stick? How many nicknames has Pat Murphy given a guy that actually stick in the public lexicon? No one calls the players what Murph calls them, but he still calls them that.
That's true. I think Pat Murphy is so dedicated to the craft there that he is trying to will an alternate reality where he can just call people things and have that be completely normal. Have everyone.
I don't think he's doing it to try to get it to stick. He's in it for the love of the game.
Yeah. I think he's in his own fantasy land. It's great. Actually, I think I quite enjoy it. The reason, I mean, Kyle Harrison, he's 24 years old. Like, he's still very much developing. And by the way, imagine trading for a pitcher that you already really like, and he shows up with a different pitch than you even knew he had, and it's like, oh great, that's just the icing on the cake to have another weapon in the arrow in the quiver. I just think with the Quinn Priester injury that we're going to talk about, I don't see any scenario where he's not in the rotation. Now, Pat Murphy's already said that Jacob Mizorowski and Chad Patrick will be in the rotation, which I find interesting because I didn't think Chad Patrick was a slam dunk as much as you did. It felt pretty good.
I don't think he was a slam dunk either.
I mean, we could feel really good about it, but that's not one of like the main guys. So if Chad Patrick is in, you can kind of start to see most of the rotation take shape. But I just don't know how you keep Kyle Harrison out at this point. Other than, I guess, if Brandon Sproat, well, but with the Priester out, I think Brandon Sproat is probably in there too. I think it's I think you've got Woodruff, Mizorowski, Patrick, Sproat, and Harrison. And you would put Harrison ahead of Sproat at this point, right?
Not so sure about that.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I would put them about level.
All right. One righty, one lefty. That's all right. Their pitching depth is silly. We've talked about it, and that's great because of this Priester injury. I'm I've gotten pretty excited watching Kyle Harrison's couple outings here to see what he can do in the regular season. But Quinn Priester's injury is kind of alarming, I would say. It's a wrist issue that he had last year. I don't know if people remember. He did skip a start, but it was, I mean, I would say in the grand scheme of things, pretty minor home stretch of the season. Didn't really feel like you needed to press every guy every fifth day. They were, you know, kind of on their way to a playoff spot. And so I didn't personally take much note of how bad that wrist was. And then you come back this year, it's still bothering him to the point that it feels like they maybe don't have a very good handle on how severe or what it is. And that's obviously an alarming situation. Give me what you think about the Quinn Priester situation. And yeah, they've got this depth, so I don't even know if they're really going to miss a beat without him, but that's a guy who was such a huge workhorse for you last year. So there's definitely a sense of loss. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, it just puts you in a spot where you kind of have an idea what you can get from Quinn Priester early in the year, and they have guys to fill in, whether it's Harrison or Sproat or Logan Henderson or whoever it is. But there are just more question marks associated with that instead of sort of like, you know, kind of figuring out who the guys are. You have one fewer guy in the mix to figure that out with, and that puts more on other guys as well. It is a bit of an odd situation because no one can really tell you what's wrong. Mm-hmm. They've diagnosed it seems to start in his wrist, and then it kind of like works its way up the arm. The shoulder's clean. The elbow is clean. Those are both good things, but he hasn't, I don't believe he's gone to a specialist yet. They've talked about it, but I think I just saw him today. I remember now trying to do an attendance check in my mind. So are they going to go, you know, get it looked at with a specialist? How long is it going to take for him to build up? At this point, JR, I don't know if he's back in April. Again, we really don't know that because we don't know exactly what the injury is. But, you know, this is a guy who's just sometimes playing catch, and the injury hurts some days. It doesn't hurt some other days. So that's a hit. But ultimately, this is why the Brewers do have the depth that they have. And if you look at the pure stuff of these other guys, they have better stuff than Quinn Priester. He's got a great sinker-slider combo, no doubt, and you know, has big league track record to his name. But Harrison and Sproat, if you're just talking pure stuff, they're better. They have better stuff.
I keep thinking about that 4.60 ERA that Pecota projected for Quinn Priester. Not that I think he will ultimately land on any Pecota projections, but you could look at what he's done and not necessarily feel like he is the pitcher that he was in terms of numbers. You know, you could feel like the defense had a lot to do with what he was able to do last year and feel like, you know, he could still, there's still a little bit of old Quinn Priester in there somewhere. But I don't know, but it would still be a loss. Even if it is just for the depth part of it, it would still be a loss. And we are talking about a guy who was kind of the, you know, pretty much the number two guy last year. Now, what about the number one guy who is coming back? Brandon Woodruff. It's been a little, to me, a little bit unclear what we're talking about when we talk about Brandon Woodruff's timeline. You know, it's like, well, the goal is October, and, you know, we're going to take it slow. And yes. I know. But it would just reassure me, Kurt, and probably some other people, if somebody would say, and I think this has been mostly said, Brandon Woodruff is going to be healthy by opening day. He will be on track. He will be in the rotation. Maybe he doesn't start opening day, but he's in the rotation on opening day.
Yeah. You're onto something here. Just say he's going to be on the opening day roster.
Please.
He's healthy right now. There is no injury. He's fine. He's ramping up. It is a slow ramp up, which is, look, let's think about it. That's fully understandable for a guy with his health track record and the fact that you're paying him this much. And the reality is, yes, you do want him available for the end of the season. But with that, maybe just say, yeah, he's available for the start of the year too, because it doesn't take a genius to math it out. Like, he's got two more spring starts that he can make. That could line him up for opening day, but it is also quite apparent that they don't, like, there's just, Woody's not really interested in pushing it for that. And the Brewers are, I think, in the same boat where, look, if we can get 28 starts, 29 starts, and have you healthy at the end of the year, that's what's important, which is fair. Like opening day, you don't need Brandon Woodruff starting opening day.
No.
It would be cool, but you do need Brandon Woodruff healthy at the end of the year. But if he's not healthy at the beginning of the year, that is a ringing alarm bell for the end of the year. Right. However, but here's the thing. Like, he is healthy now. So just come out and say it. And a lot will be assuaged.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So if I'm looking at this from my typical Rube standpoint, as I am,
of course,
as I am one, you know, if you're not available to start the year, that's not the biggest red flag in the world. The Brewers had a lot of guys who, you know, started the year and only lasted like a few days before they went on the injured list last year. Well, there was an Aaron Civale show.
Say names.
Aaron Civale was there for a hot second and then he wasn't. Nestor Cortez was there for a hot second and then he wasn't.
What happened in his first start?
Nestor Cortez. Well, the torpedo bats were invented and their legend was born on the backs of Nestor Cortez's first three pitches of his Major League Baseball season against his old team. The first three of six deployments, five deployments in two plus innings. Austin Wells was among those, I believe, who hit a home run at some point in that game. Wasn't one of the first three guys, but there was a lot happening there. I only say that because I believe, did Austin Wells just homer in the World Baseball Classic? I feel like he might have. I might be making that up. In any event, you know, like you could sit him down for a little bit, but the thing is, if he's not there at the start of the year, that's just, you know, if he is healthy, that's just less baseball season that he is available. If you want to tell me that he's going to like show up on the injured list from time to time over the course of the season, of course I understand that, but like you're paying him $23 million. There's more at stake that he actually have a full fledged season. And if that's not going to be 30 starts, I get that. But you know, if you're going to shave off the first month, if he's not going to be there on March 26th, I would be surprised if he's there on April 1st, you know, or April 15th, even. Like, they're going to take their sweet time. I guess my thought is, if he's healthy now, why do you need that week? Why do you need that, you know, built in?
Well, because the buildup is slower.
Yeah.
If you just math, like if he gets, so he hasn't gotten to three ups yet. He was supposed to, and they said he didn't get to the third up because there was a long half inning in there. Okay, so if he gets to a fourth up in his next outing, which we'll see because he hasn't gotten to three ups yet, and then you can get to five ups by the end of spring training, it feels like they'll just like add some more rest in there, I guess. And then he's not going, like at this rate, he's not going on the IL. He's not hurt. You can't. Pat Murphy has come out and said he's not hurt. They're not going to do that. He's making $22 million this year.
But last year with Jose Quintana, he wasn't hurt either. He was in a similar situation where he was on a slow ramp up and he accepted a assignment.
I was going to say he was optioned. That's
he different. Was. He accepted that. He accepted.
Oh, are you saying what he's going to accept and accept an option?
I have no idea what's even on the table. Like, I don't know if that's an option or not, but I mean,
it just wouldn't make sense to me to shelve him for 15 days when you can get two starts out of him in that time, even with the slow buildup.
That's how I feel, especially because if he's healthy now, he's got to pitch now. Like, you don't know how much longer you have that. The beginning of the season, if you're not ready to go, it's such a red flag to me. It never seems to work out.
Yeah, that's fair. That is absolutely fair. He is going to pitch. I think he's going to pitch pretty early in the season. He's just not going to pitch opening day. It is weird that they won't just come out and say that, but also I understand what we got 2 weeks till basically 3 weeks till opening day. So
yeah,
given all the factors here, they're just kind of just playing poker a little bit.
Who is going to start on opening day? That's Shane. Okay, so I was going to ask you that if you thought that was it. Because I was going to say Shane Smith, former Brewers prospect, a Chicago White Sox starter, he will, in fact, be starting on opening day at American Family Field. He was told that on Sunday, some video released by the White Sox. So Shane Smith, ex-Brewers prospect from a couple years ago, is going to be back for opening day in opponent's uniform. And you think it's just Miz for the Brewers?
Yeah, just a Biloxi Shucker Fest.
Let's go!
A Javik Blake off.
Oh, Javik Blake. It didn't sound good. Didn't sound good. Had to think about that. Javik Blake, who we know has to be, he's a listener, right? We love Javik Blake, and
I don't know. This is why I love doing my name drops, because I find out if you are a loyal listener or not.
Javik, this is your time. This is your time. Yeah, I think it'll be Mizorowski too, but we'll see. That is a heady thing to just give a guy who's had half a season of baseball under his belt.
Well, have you seen the rotation, my brother?
I have. There's questions.
Brandon Woodruff has 7+ years of big league service time, which felt low. Like, his active service time to me felt low, but anyway, that's what it was.
They were sending him down a lot in like 2018.
Yes, yeah.
In retrospect, that seems weird. Yeah.
So this is his 10th year, but he barely played in 17, you know, maybe 2 months at the end of the year there. And then they sent him up and down a bunch in 18. So you're right. But nevertheless, JR, the rest of the opening day rotation, if it doesn't have Aaron Ashby, which the plot is thickening here. If it doesn't have Aaron Ashby, who's being fully stretched out as a starter, they don't, like, the other four starters wouldn't even have half combined wouldn't even have half as much of service time as Woody. So you're going to have someone who's just a kid getting the ball on opening day. And if we do the math, Miz, if you're giving your guys, I think they're giving them 5 days. Although I think Miz was operating on 4 days rest with his outings this week. But if you give him five, he pitches on Saturday, and then he pitches next Friday. And then he pitches. Oh, look at that. It lines up perfectly. Oh, and Chad Patrick, who's like kind of the other option there, doesn't pitch till Wednesday this week. He's after Miz. Oh, that's weird. So yeah, no, I'm getting to tinfoil hat time of spring training. And it's not even tinfoil hat, man. I'm just doing the math. 1 + 2 = 4, baby.
It's just using a calculator or your brain even. Chad Patrick, number two starter. I'm not sure we saw that coming for sure, but I think that's kind of where we're headed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the order after that, because Kyle Harrison pitched today. I don't know who's following Aaron Ashby tomorrow. It could be Sproat. So
your colleague, Todd Rosiak, and mine was very assured that he didn't believe Aaron Ashby would wind up as a starter, that this is just, you know, a smart thing to do, stretch him out just in case he's going to be a reliever. I don't know, man. I don't know. I feel that's probably right, but what do you think?
Yeah, probably right. But I only say that because I think Kyle Harrison is that guy.
He's a dude.
I think he's that guy. And I also think, I don't think, I know they love Brandon Sproat. These guys won't shut up about him. It's like Brandon Sproat. Yeah, I get it. He's really, you like him. I'm just kidding. He does look incredible as well. He's like, he looks like a pitcher, man.
He does.
He pitches like a pitcher. He looks like a pitcher. He looks like an athlete. So I don't know. There's something going on with Ashby, and there's some things in the works for sure. Like, the pitching staff is going to be creative early in the year as well, I think, because their bullpen's going to have a bunch of lefties. It's going to have some long men. It seems like DL Hall is bound for the open day roster at this point. So they do have a couple interesting decisions to make there. And I'm not ruling Aaron Ashby out by any means, not at all. And I'm not just saying that because he's going to get Cy Young votes this year.
Jeez, of course, we're back to that. I am looking at Brandon Sproat's picture. Just facially, looks like John Franco. That's a name a little before your time, perhaps. But in that Mets
John
cap,
Franco?
Yeah, John Franco was a hot shot closer in the
I was thinking 90s. About. I was thinking about the actor. Who's the actor?
Named Franco? Like James Franco? The guy
James Franco, yeah. Handsome guy. Handsome man. Yeah.
That is not what Brandon Sproat looks like. He does not look like James Franco, star of many other things, but all I can think of is like 127 hours, the 11/22/63 adaptation, the Stephen King thing on Netflix, and Pineapple Express. I know there's way better stuff in there for James Franco. I apologize. But
where is pineapple on your fruits?
It's way up there.
I don't think it's S tier, because it's like, it's so pungent that it makes a couple of my molars like twinge a little bit. It's kind of like,
you can't just snack on it. You can't just like eat pineapple absentmindedly, right? I mean, you could, but
yeah,
it's hard.
You could. No, I couldn't do that with watermelon. In fact, I just did it yesterday. So watermelon is in my S tier for sure. But pineapple, you are in my A tier. And if we're talking smoothies, if we're talking juice,
pizza.
Pizza, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. It's like it's like a C tier pizza pizza topping.
I see.
It's in my A tier.
I've been back on apples a little bit. You know, like sometimes you just revert to the old school, and I've been revisiting apples in my life.
That's good. All fruits are good. I'm not going to knock you for that.
And of course, I put raisins on salad, like every sensible person.
JR, you're going to love this.
I am.
Obviously, your boy eats well when he's down here.
Of course, obviously. Like a king. I've been to
Ta Carbone twice. And, oh, and by the way, yeah. I almost went three times, but instead of going to Ta Carbone, I went to the Mariscos restaurant across the way.
Yeah.
And they didn't speak a lick of English, and it was great.
Because you speak Spanish.
Because I told the waitress, she was like, "Do you speak Spanish?" And I'm like, "Un poco." And she's like, and I'm like, "Do you speak English?" And she's like, "No, nadie." I'm like, "Shit," which means no one here does. I'm like, "Oh, great. It's all on me."
Gotta bust that out. Bust out the Spanish.
Did get a free Corona out of it, though. Did get a free Corona out of it. So that
they were impressed with your Spanish?
Yeah. She was like, "You want anything else?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'll have a Corona." And she was like, and then I pulled out my card and she was like, "Oh, no. It's on us."
I love that for you.
Oh, that's great. Anyway, I've been to Ta Carbone twice. Across the street, a car almost blew up today. It was in flames.
A car almost blew up?
Yes. Like, welcome to Maryvale.
Like a car bomb? What are we talking about?
No. Just a car. It was overheating. We saw the whole thing happen. It was smoking on the hood.
Very different.
And the whole thing was on fire.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if the fire gets to
the gas can.
I don't know. I don't know, JR. I've never seen a car on fire before to this degree. The firefighters got there just in time. Anyway, what was I saying? I've been to Ta Carbone twice. I eat well down here, but also, JR, I'm bringing bagged salads for lunches. Mm,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that all the time. But it's
your boy's got the high cholesterol, man.
Same. We've discussed. It's just a fact of life.
It's unfortunate for us, and it's unfortunate for our kids.
Yeah, I don't care about them whatsoever. It's just like, deal with it. Sorry. I'm just trying to live, man. I'm just trying to live. They make medicines for that. Medicine that works great, actually. So they're young. They don't have it yet. They could live their life.
They won't give it to me yet because they're like, you're 30. Figure it out yourself. Stop eating fat.
Oh, shoot. That's tough.
And go work out.
Yeah, my doctor takes one look at me and they're like, nothing else we can do for you. You're obviously not going to the plan, you know, following any plan. Why don't you take this medicine every day and figure it out? And that's exactly what I do. And brother, those numbers just plunge. It's wonderful. Wonderful stuff. Love it. It's actually not super ideal, but it's fine. No, it's fine. We're working through it. We're surviving. We're trying not to cut our fingers off and, you know, not pass out dead. I don't know where we were. We were still talking about the rotation last I checked, and I don't know if there's anything else you want to say.
Okay, so
I
just want to talk about things.
You just want to, like, freestyle?
I just want to freestyle, JR.
Because we haven't talked any World Baseball Classic or Short Kings or any of that yet.
I don't care. Well, I do care about Short Kings.
Yes.
I don't care about World Baseball. I do care about World Baseball Classic. I'm a big WBC guy, but not on this pod. That's different.
Yeah, that's fine. There's a lot of exhibition before the real stuff anyway.
Yeah, you know that Bryce Turing had a good game. Congrats. No, I've been down here for a week now. Feels like longer than that, but a week. And you know what that allows me to do, Jared? It allows me to smell things, get the nose out. You've been what?
Yo, no, you just mean like you're like finding stories.
I'm not going in the laundry room. No, look, you're around a team long enough and you're around people and personalities long enough. And, you know, luckily for us in this job, the Brewers have a lot of carryover and you can kind of like, you understand what people think to a degree by what they say or what they do. And that's what's going on in a week here. And the Brewers love David Hamilton. I mean, Murph, you know, said about his quantum leap guy. They love this guy. But it's not just him. It's a lot of people. They love David Hamilton. So that will be interesting to follow.
Dave, third baseman? David Hamilton?
Maybe. I could very much see it. I could very, very much see it. Although Luis Renjifo was playing less this spring, which kind of makes me think he's the guy, but Shane Smith's a righty and Renjifo's better from the right side. So I don't know. It'll work itself out. Like, I don't think David Hamilton's going to be some superstar, but over 400 at-bats, I definitely get the sense that the Brewers internally are like, yeah, that's two war right there. We'll take that.
Let me ask you this then. Why did the Brewers trade David Hamilton in the first place for Hunter Renfro, which is what happened three seasons ago?
People change. Actually, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he was just a prospect at the time. He and our guy Alex Benelis, Oak Creek High School.
It wasn't Matt Arnold, and it wasn't this version of Matt Arnold either. So,
no, that is true. That is true. Yeah,
we do need to talk more about this. Is one of Grant Bills's things, late Brewers era David Stearns. I know he did have he did put together a team that won 95 games in 21. But congrats, buddy. Congrats. You had Corbin Burns. You had the best rotation in Brewers history. None of them ever got hurt. Sorry.
How much?
That sounded really mean. I didn't mean to be mean about that. I just agree with Grant's
take. Oh, I like mean.
That late Brewers tenure, David Stearns, doesn't hold a candle to what they're doing now. I agree with that.
Unfortunately, that's proof is in the pudding on that. That is completely true. However, I wonder, I guess, like, from a big picture standpoint, like, how, to what degree, when a trade is made, when you get a guy like David Hamilton that you think has some untapped potential, you know, to what degree is it like, oh, we caught something on tape that we kind of like, or that we see something that other teams don't? And to what degree is, oh, this could work, or it might not? I don't know. You know, like, there has to be a little bit of...
I don't think the Brewers do... I mean, in some cases, I think they did that with Andrew Vaughn.
Yeah. Well, because they didn't have a huge asset that they were getting rid of. They were...
No.
This was like... This isn't going to work, so let's just try something.
That made sense for them, and honestly, I still have to give them credit for that, too, because in my mind, I'm thinking just like, oh, just take a flyer on a 19-year-old.
Of course.
Instead, they worked out a deal that kind of is equal money, and they took a guy who sucked and had no path to playing time, and it worked. And like that. You know, that would not have been my first thought on the trade, is go for Andrew Vaughn. So, you know, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did see something. I think they saw pedigree. I think they saw pedigree there. And that's maybe the most I can give them. No, JR, I think the Brewers always have something in mind. They're not just taking willy-nilly pot shots at guys. They have a lot of people in the org that thought David Hamilton could be a good player.
Mm-hmm. And now we'll see.
We will see. Garrett Mitchell. I don't know what to think, JR.
Well, then we're right where we've been every single year with Garrett Mitchell. This is the death taxes and Garrett Mitchell confounding us all.
So here's a fun thing about Garrett Mitchell. He's put four balls in play this spring. They've all been at 104 miles per hour or harder. There was a home run that flew from Scottsdale to Sedona. That would be the opposite direction. Oh, no, the mountains are in that direction. So it was from Scottsdale to Sedona.
I trust you.
He had a double the other way, that like 105. He smoked a grounder, and then today he smacked a 111 line drive. Third base made a diving play on it.
Okay, that's great.
That's great. But
what else?
Part of it's there's only four balls in play. Yeah. He hasn't played a ton. He's played like four games, and there's been some walks in there too. But there's still some swing and miss. So
so much.
So I want to talk about it, but also I don't, because I don't have I don't have a feel on that. It's just tantalized, but also there's still swing and miss.
I think more than on any other position on the diamond, center field is what I was just talking about. They are going to figure out who sticks. It could be Blake Perkins. It could be Brandon Lockridge. It could be Garrett Mitchell.
Yes.
Maybe it's Jackson Chourio, and maybe it's something else.
Okay. I'm glad you said the name. Brandon Lockridge is going to have a significant role for this team. His bat moves so fast. He's such a good athlete in the box. I see what the Brewers saw in that trade for sure.
He's dinged up.
He's what?
Dinged up. He's hurt.
Well, yeah, he's back now.
Yeah, I know, but a little concerning anytime somebody has to.
I don't see a world in which they carry him over Perkins to begin the season, because Blake Perkins' defense is so good. Mm. But it's a conversation that if they haven't had it, if there's no one in the room who's, I would love to be in the room for this, because like, is it a situation where you can just say things, you can just float out hypotheticals and make people think about it? Because that's a conversation they should at least be having, is like, what if we put Brandon Lockridge on this team instead? I don't think they will. I don't know if they should, but I am intrigued there. I am intrigued there for sure.
Now, Blake Perkins, the option situation, he does have a year left, right? Or maybe two.
Just one?
Yeah. I don't know what happened last year. Did they use one last year?
Because
before activating him, they did, if I recall, they did give him a little bit of a stretch down there, but I'm not sure it was.
Yeah, he's he might have been optioned, but I don't know if it was for 15 days.
Which I would normally not care about. What's the difference between 1 year and two? But they showed last year with Priester, they actually do kind of care about that extra year. They seem to, I don't know, function a little differently there. So I guess like you could, I mean, obviously Lockridge has options remaining too, so it doesn't really matter, but
two options like, for Perkins.
Okay. It's not like they have to keep these guys on the opening day roster.
No, and again, look, opening day roster. That's kind of what I'm getting with Lockridge. Like opening day roster. I'm trying to care about less and less. And also, JR, oh, I need to mention this. Nothing matters.
Nothing matters. Yes, we've said that, but we were just talking about like, oh, Kyle Harrison's a dude now. Okay,
maybe not a dude, but I'm not saying his performance matters, but I.
Right. No,
God, I can't. I was just going to say his changeup matters, but that goes away from my brand and I can't do that.
I wonder. I'm trying to quick look this up and I'm striking out looking at the guys who started the 2025 season with the Brewers and how many were there for any length of time, because Tyler Alexander is on that list. Aaron Civale, Nestor Cortez,
Elvin
Rodriguez, oh, our dear sweet Elvin Rodriguez, Brian Hudson, who of course didn't last very long.
Piamps.
Yes. Yoel Piamps, who did
Piguero.
Not. Elvis Piguero is on that team. Oliver Dunn, Vinny Capra. I mean, this is a crazy
Eric Haas,
a crazy list of guys who did not last very long throughout the course of the season. And I know we know this. We always go into it, be like, it's not the opening day roster doesn't ultimately matter. But, you know, the difference between their NLCS roster and their opening day roster is pretty substantial, pretty remarkable. You know, Garrett Mitchell got hurt, so he doesn't, you know, you can't really count that to the same degree, but that's another guy. Who didn't end up contributing as much as I'm sure they thought. So, again, don't get too wrapped up in that opening day roster. It's bound to change. It's going to change very soon. Do you want to talk about Short Kings? You wrote about them.
I did. It's actually a fun story. Of course it's a fun story. I was writing about Short Kings.
JSOnline.com, if you don't know what we're talking about. Kurt,
I would only do that because it's fun, and I am a diabolical human being who needs that story to break up spring training.
Well, we've talked about the short people a lot on this podcast, so it is a good topic.
I enjoyed getting to like kind of reaching the conclusion that I did with it, which is that no, like the Brewers aren't going out and trying to get short guys, or so they say, but no, they're not trying to go out and get short guys. But like, clearly Pat Murphy loved, like he has an affinity for shorter players, like just their style. He's drawn to it for the most part because they have to play a certain way. So that's one thing, but also you kind of get at this dynamic between the front office and the manager where they are aligned in their philosophy to a large degree, despite taking different routes to get there. And also then you can touch on this thing of like the Brewers front office very much does care about the intangibles, which is fascinating to, you know, think about it. And I guess we've talked about that, and there's been all these stories written, you know, there's like two national writer angles that they do on the Brewers. And, you know, they touch on like, how are the Brewers so good? Oh, well, Christian Yelich says it's the right persons in the room. So we knew that to a degree, but it's good to hear. Matt Arnold had a great quote in the story. I love this quote where he was talking about how he learned that baseball is played by humans and it's not all ones and zeros. I thought that was a great quote.
Yeah.
And kind of does help shed a little light on how the Brewers find a little bit of an edge. And it involves having the right person who's coachable and who gives a bleep, basically. Like he takes his job seriously, and I don't know. I enjoyed writing it. Of course, it's about Short Kings. How could I not?
It was a lot of fun. The Brewers, of course. Of course, it wouldn't tell us if they found something desirable in a 5'9" person. But I do believe them when the quotes that they gave you, and great stuff from Matt Arnold, from Sal, from the people that you talked to in that story. Another story that you wrote. I think, Kurt, did you sabotage their ABS system? Did you do something? Oh, what happened over there?
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Brewers.
You wrote about this system that they developed to sort of enable the right decisions with the ABS, and then the MLB was immediately like, stop doing that.
I am sorry to the Milwaukee Brewers, but also I'm not sorry. I'm just doing my job, dude.
I know this.
It's a good system. I thought it made a lot of sense. In watching it, I'm like, this isn't cheating.
No.
Something about it feels like it's for sure in a gray area, but you just can't get any help from the rule is ambiguous enough where you can't get help from the dugout. What does that mean? You can't get help before the pitch. Where does this extend? I don't know. The players are just going to have to figure it out themselves. But I will say, since they instituted this, there's been two games since then. And the challenges have been notably in less high leverage of situations.
Mm.
Like, it was pretty clear when the Brewers were bringing the green. So now we've seen what the nerds, the R&D department, has decided in conjunction with some baseball people, where you should challenge. We've seen it. I saw it with my eyes. I saw them tap their heads and give the signal and stuff. And a lot of the challenges that I've seen this spring from not just the Brewers, but every team have been all over the place. Like, oh, here's a 0-1 pitch in the third inning. And for the most part, guys are correct. So if you're right, the strategy of it doesn't matter at all. But I'm curious to see as the season goes on. They're going to coach, like, this is something that teams are going to want to control a little bit or a lot of it. And the Brewers might be in the a lot of it side of that.
Yeah.
But, like, how are they going to, you know, how are they going to pass this along? Because it's tough to tell in spring. Like, are players just doing it to do it? Or are they, you know, or do they just not have an understanding of context? I don't know.
Right. Are they making an emotional decision? Or are they, you know.
Sometimes they are, for sure.
Oh, yeah. We're going to see that a lot.
It's not calculated at all. And I just have no idea if that is just spring training or not.
Right. No, that's a really good point, too. We don't know how spring training differs from any of this. But if anyone's interested, they should go back, read that story, this process that they kind of hashed out that sort of let batters know the ideal time, you know, the ideal times to make that decision. And the league is not having it. So when Joey Ortiz looks over to the dugout after a borderline pitch and Pat Murphy's standing there holding a taser, that would be something from the dugout. That would be a sign from the dugout. He would get in trouble for that. And also for having a taser in the dugout. You think he'd get in trouble for that too, probably?
Yeah. Although I would like to see it. I'm generally anti-violence.
Yes.
In this instance, you could talk me into it.
The content is very good. Joey Ortiz in Mexico versus the United States and Bryce Terang on Monday night. Monday Night Baseball, the World Baseball Classic. Who do you got, Kurt?
I got the U.S.
Yeah.
I've been kind of underwhelmed, but also now we're going to WBC talk. I love this. I've been kind of underwhelmed, but I think that's actually a good thing because U.S. is still piecing together these pretty good offensive performances by... Like, they're just turning, like, this whole, their whole lineup is, PCA even has had some good at-bats. But, like, that's the thing. That's what I'm getting at, JR. Like, they ball strike. These guys just grind you down.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Brewers, like, when they're at their best in a sense.
Mm.
Except they have Kyle Schwarber.
Yes.
And Aaron Judge. So many guys that haven't even hit the crap out of the ball yet. So
once they get their pitch, they're gonna tank it.
Well, they haven't yet, but sometimes, because Schwarber did, Judge did. Bryce Terang hit a couple balls hard.
Bryce Terang with a bases clearing double that is caught by a quality outfielder. I'm sorry to say, trying not to cast too much aspersions, but that is a catchable baseball. So that was so cool. I mean, there have been some really cool moments that don't relate to Team USA. I mean, Andrew Fisher homered for Italy today and was super pumped running around the bases. First end of a back-to-back home run situation is Italy one. Steven Cruz, Brewers minor leaguer, striking out Juan Soto. that had to be crazy in a 3-3 game.
So I heard this from multiple Brewers people, It's just kind of funny when you think about it. They were like upset that Steven Cruz had to go back out there for a second inning, and not from a workload standpoint, from a like, No, man, he was like, it's a disservice.
Give him his flowers.
Yeah, give him his flowers. Like, Stephen Cruz, like, gets those three, strikes out Juan Soto, goes 1-2-3 through the top of the order.
Yeah.
And then it looked like, you know, it's Caminero and Machado. Like,
yeah, Machado doubles, Caminero homers, the first two guys.
This is how baseball goes, man. You can only get away with it for so long. Or in the Brewers' case, for 162 games last year, you can get away with some tomfoolery, but
yeah.
It's just funny that multiple people were just like strategic reasons, were like, don't let him go back out there. But what are you gonna do when you're Nicaragua and you're like, well,
yeah,
you're one of our better pitchers, you've been in double A.
Carlos Rodriguez, speaking of Nicaragua, was on the hill today. They did not win, but he was fine. Four innings, gave up a couple runs, I think, or maybe only one run. He was okay. He did good. So yeah, the teams that you'd expect to win are winning. The Dominican Republic, Japan, and the United States are ticketed for some sort of showdown here at the end, most likely. So the teams that you expect to win are winning. There's been two walk-off home runs, which is very exciting. Ozzie Albies hitting one of those. That's super fun.
And Puerto a different Rico extra, and another extra inning game too.
I know. So that's cool. I'm into it. There needs to be a few upsets for me to get really into it, because like right now, all the outcomes are all still very much what I would predict would happen. But
the real juice of the tournament is U.S. against the Dominican in the semis.
That's right. Of course, that's true.
That's every tournament. That's March Madness, especially.
Like, yes.
I'm sorry, FAU and San Diego State. I don't really want to see you in Final Four. I don't want to see Duke either. But
that's a bold claim. I do.
You do?
Well, I want to see one of them. I want to see one Cinderella in the Final Four.
When they play each other and it's San Diego State in the national championship. 100%. Game.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Now, that game came down to the absolute wire, and it was a bucket at the end. Nick Boyd was defending. Future Wisconsin Badgers Final Four contender Nick Boyd was unfortunately on defense when that shot was hit. Very tough. But
love Nick Boyd so much.
Well, he's really quite good. And the Badgers, I mean, the Badgers are they look to me, that's a team that can go deep, as with many, many, many teams, or they could just lose in that first round game. You know, like
it's the second time, maybe even the first time that the Badgers are officially the team you do not want to play in the tournament. Now, which that probably means they'll lose in the round of 32, but maybe the other time was the year they beat Villanova, like they got underseeded, but I don't know if that team was, they beat Villanova. They were really good. I don't know if they were actually all that good though. So,
I don't know.
Yeah. Then again, they should have been in the Elite Eight. So they probably were.
Really thought they were going to beat Notre Dame there in that game in the Sweet 16.
Nope, different year. But thanks, JR.
They all run together. Thanks. Who did they lose to that year?
Salt in this open wound. No, stop. We're done.
Oh,
we're
Florida. Done. Florida. Oh, no. I forgot. Kurt, any last thoughts? Because we can wrap it up if you don't have anything else.
Yeah, one. So I went to game four of the Nets series in 21, and the Bucks absolutely demolished. They throttled the Nets in the fourth quarter.
Mm.
And Chris Chioza checked in for the Nets. And I was with my buddy who was at the Final Four with me. We were in college.
Game four together. Is that where Irving gets hurt?
Irving got hurt. Yeah. Sure. So they just throttled them in the second half, I think. And Chioza checks in, and the crowd was filtering out. A lady two rows in front of me turned around. I wasn't swearing, but she was just very confused why I was so animated at this one bench warmer for the Nets.
Christian.
I'm in the upper deck.
Yeah.
But I had some things to get off my chest, and I removed them from my pectorals.
Do you remember? Well, no, not remember. You know this about me that I like to.
This night of September.
That's a different end of the season. That's the date that Brandon Woodruff will be ready. that's mean. I don't mean that.
That is mean. That's a mean.
I don't mean that. I don't know why I said that.
One of the five best pitchers in franchise history, man.
You know that I like to watch a game cast during a game, and I like to know what's going to happen. That was one of the games where I was definitely game casting, and I saw all these celebratory tweets. This is March. And I'm like,
I don't need it to be March right now. I just, because Florida has the ball and I think Wisconsin is going to win this game, and Wisconsin should have won that game. They had it in overtime and then everybody's freaking out. I'm like, oh no, what happens? And so you watch, it's like a slow motion car crash. No,
why are we doing this? Why are you doing this to me?
I don't know. It's a fun time of year. I like
no,
to.
No, it's not. This is not a fun time of year.
It's an exorcism. You can't move past your demons if you don't confront them head on, Kurt.
Yeah, no, that's actually a very good point.
Do you realize it's been 10 years since Bronson Koenig's shot? 10 years.
But I constantly confront them to their face and they don't go away. So,
yes, you have a point, actually.
I live with Wisconsin March Madness losses embellished in this noggin of mine. And they go nowhere.
I did do that for a long time. Marshall Henderson, you know, like I had a list of names of people, Steph Curry, who had wronged the Wisconsin Badgers.
Marshall Henderson wasn't even that good in that game. Badgers just going to hit the broadside of a barn. So I'm cool with it.
There's just too many names. It's just not worth that energy. It's just like
there's so many names.
67 of those teams are going to lose. So yeah. Anyway, we are, we will obviously be paying attention to baseball as well as the college basketball going forward. As March unfolds here, Kurt, I think we'll do this again next week. Does that sound good to you?
God,
I did this. I'm sorry. I broke you a little bit. We'll be back next week on the Microbrew Podcast, talking Milwaukee Brewers spring training, maybe more WBC. We'll get to the good stuff on the WBC. We'll know who's going to be in the dance. Oh, should we? We could do this during Selection Sunday next week. Do you want to like talk Brewers, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh gosh,
that'll be tricky because it's 3:30 p.m. local time.
Oh yeah, no, we shouldn't do that. No, that's fine.
Sorry,
we'll break down the bracket, and also
probably we could do a selection show bracket breakdown special episode.
Do it's Kurt and JR. No, I'm gonna have to workshop that intro real
hard. That was bad.
That's real tough. Thanks for listening, everybody, to this edition of Microbrew. We'll be back with you again next week. See you later. Bye-bye.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two fourths of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's minds.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That is amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.